Chapter 13 is entitled The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, and today we are on text 25. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Angosma Dema. Angosma Medan Rajarshi.
Angosma Medan Rajarshi. Swaminam
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya answered.
Maitreya answered.
Anga.
Anga.
King Anga.
King Anga.
Ashwamedha.
Ashwamedha.
Ashwamedha sacrifice.
Ashwamedha sacrifice.
Rajarishi.
Rajarishi.
The saintly king.
The saintly king.
Ajahara.
Ajahara.
Executed.
Executed.
Mahakratum.
Mahakratum.
Great sacrifice.
Great sacrifice.
Na.
Nah.
Not.
No.
Ajagum.
Ajagum.
Came.
Devata.
Devata. The demigods.
The demigods.
Tasmin.
Tasmin.
In that sacrifice.
In that sacrifice.
Ahuta.
Ahuta.
Being invited.
Being invited.
Brahma Vadiki.
Brahma Vadiki.
By the Brahmanas, expert in executing sacrifices.
By the Brahmanas, expert in executing sacrifices.
Translation. Sri Maitreya replied, "My dear Vidura, once the great King Anga arranged to perform the great sacrifice known as Ashwamedha, all the expert Brahmanas present there knew how to invite the demigods, but in spite of their efforts, no demigods participated or appeared in that sacrifice. Please repeat." Sri Maitreya replied.
Sri Maitreya replied.
My dear Vidura.
My dear Vidura.
Once the great King Anga.
Once the great King Anga.
Arranged to perform.
Arranged to perform.
The great sacrifice known as Ashwamedha.
The great sacrifice known as Ashwamedha.
All the expert Brahmanas.
All the expert Brahmanas.
Present. Knew how to invite demigods.
Knew how to invite the demigods.
But in spite of their efforts.
But in spite of their efforts.
No demigods participated.
No demigods participated.
Or appeared in that sacrifice.
Or appeared in that sacrifice.
A Vedic sacrifice is not an ordinary performance. The demigods used to participate in such sacrifices. And animals sacrificed in such performances were reincarnated with new life. In the age of Kali, there are no powerful Brahmanas who can invite the demigods or give renewed life to animals. Formerly, the Brahmanas were well versed in Vedic mantras, could show the potency of the mantras. But in this age, because there are no such Brahmanas, all such sacrifices are forbidden. The sacrifice in which horses were offered were called as Ashwamedha. Sometimes cows were sacrificed, Gavalamba, not for eating purposes, but to give them new life, in order to show the potency of the mantra. In this age, therefore, the only practical yajna is Sankirtana yajna, or chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra 24 hours a day. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Mukale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankayate Sirim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Guru Vinatarinam Vancha Kalpa Tanuryascha Kripa Sindhu Yerevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita
Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So we are continuing the discussion in Canto 4 of Dhru Maharaj's pastime. Dhru Maharaj's pastime has almost come to an end. In the last chapter, in the 12th chapter, we saw that it was entitled actually Dhru Maharaj Goes Back Home Back to Godhead. So in that whole chapter, just to give a context, we saw that how Dhru Maharaj perfected his life after he had darshan of the Lord, and then how he ruled the kingdom for many, many thousands of years. And then there was a celestial airplane which came down along with the Vishnu Dutas to take him back to Godhead. So Dhru Maharaj has wound up his pastimes, and now Maitreya Muni and Vidura have moved on to the next phase. So Vidura has inquired from Maitreya Muni, but please tell me more about Dhru Maharaj and about his descendants. So in this chapter, Maitreya Muni has started describing the descendants of Dhru Maharaj. And the whole lineage was described in the previous few verses leading up to today's verse. So Maitreya Muni tells Vidura that Dhru Maharaj's son was Utkala. And Dhru Maharaj, you know, he was the son of such a glorious father. So Dhru Maharaj was a pure devotee of the Lord. And his son was also an equally pure devotee of the Lord. He was completely uninterested in getting entangled in the material affairs of this world. In fact, Utkala's character is very similar to Jadbharat or Maharaj Rishabhdev. So, you know, as Jadbharat was actually misunderstood by people to be dumb, deaf, completely unintelligent, not aware of, you know, the worldly ways. People used to think he's mad also. So in the same way with Utkala also it is described in the previous verses which Maitreya Muni tells Vidura. That the way he came across, because he was completely uninterested in this world, people used to think that he is dumb and deaf. And even in his own kingdom, the ministers and the elders felt that he is not capable of sitting on the throne because he is not interested and he doesn't have the intelligence to run a kingdom. So then they actually put Utkala's brother, he was his cousin brother, his name was Vatsara, they put him on the throne because he was more qualified to look after the kingdom and to become the king and to continue Dhru Maharaj's lineage. So we see that now Vatsara has sat on the throne and his descendants are being described right now. So Maitreya Muni spends quite a few verses in telling who was whose son, who married whom, who were their children. There were a few verses describing that. And then Maitreya Muni comes to Anga, Maharaj Anga. So one of the sons in Dhru Maharaj's lineage through Vatsara was Maharaj Anga. And yesterday the verse concluded by Maitreya Muni glorifying Vidura. for the submissiveness which he was showing in seeking all these answers from Maitreya Muni. And today, after he has glorified Vidura, he has started narrating the pastimes of Maharajanga. So today's verse is actually opening up the pastime of Maharajanga. We will see the next chapter describing the pastimes of Maharajanga and his son, King Vena. And then it will lead us into the pastimes of Maharaj Prithu, who is a partial expansion of the Lord. So today's verse is setting that scene. So we are seeing over here in this verse that Maharaj Anga, who was a Rajarishi, he was a saintly king. He has actually sat down along with the priests in his kingdom. And he has started performing a great sacrifice called as Ashwamedha, or the horse sacrifice he has started performing. And it is mentioned, so this was Satya Yuga actually going on when this sacrifice is being done. But it is mentioned over here that even though everything was done correctly, still no demigods came in that sacrifice to partake of the sacrificial offerings. And the priests were wondering why this happened. And in the next few verses that will be discussed. So the priests were qualified. Obviously it was Satya Yuga. So the priests were very qualified. And they assure Maharaj Anga that you had also gathered all the paraphernalia very nicely. Like with unmotivation, I mean without any motivation, very pure ingredients you had gathered for the sacrifice. So everything has been done correctly, but still the demigods are not appearing in this sacrifice to accept their offering. So in the previous ages, the Brahmin priests were so powerful in chanting the Vedic mantras and in performance of the sacrifices that what to speak of demigods, even the Supreme Lord himself would appear in these sacrifices to actually take part. So when we do our offering at home, like if we are offering bhoga to Krishna, or any sacrifices are done, we are actually keeping a photo or we are keeping a deity and, you know, we are doing the sacrifice. So obviously we know the deity is non-different from Krishna. But Krishna in his actual form doesn't appear, or Vishnu or demigods in their actual form don't appear when we do any sacrifices or offerings. But in Satya Yuga, the priests were so powerful that the Supreme Lord himself used to appear. And in the same lineage we will see, when Maharaj Prithu will also do an Ashwamedha sacrifice, a few chapters down, and Lord Vishnu himself comes, even Brahma comes. So all the personalities used to come in these sacrifices. And that is why the priests were wondering why this has happened. So Maharaj Anga was also a little despondent that why no one is appearing when I'm doing this elaborate sacrifice for the satisfaction of the higher authorities. And he breaks his vow of silence. So, you know, they were all so committed to doing a proper sacrifice that the king used to follow silence when the sacrifice was done. So he actually breaks his vow of silence just to converse with the priests and to find out why this has happened, why no one has appeared in his sacrifice. And in the next few verses, we will see that the priests will explain to Maharaj Anga that in this lifetime, you have not done any sins. We are all well qualified. We chanted also the mantras properly. Your ingredients were also correct. The time was also auspicious. So every aspect of the sacrifice was done properly. And there is no sins you have committed in this lifetime because of which the demigod should not appear in this sacrifice. So then the priests are able to judge through their divine vision that they tell Maharaj Anga that you have done some sins in your previous lifetimes, because of which you do not have any sons. And because of that, no demigods have appeared to accept the sacrificial oblations or the offerings. So once they give this explanation to Maharaj Anga, they also give the solution to him of how he should perform another sacrifice, especially to get a son. And once he has a son, all the demigods will then become pleased and they will appear to accept his sacrificial offerings. So we will see further that how Maharaj Anga is, you know, Rajarishi, listening to the advice of the Brahmin priest, and then he will do these sacrifices. And then that's how King Vena is born, who is Maharaj Anga's son. So Prabhupada says in this particular verse that the sacrifice was not perfect. It did not yield any results, even though so much efforts were put in by the priests. And we see a similar situation in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In chapter 18 of the first canto, it is described, the sages of Naimisharanya have gathered. And they have gathered because of the better. Kali Yuga had already started. Krishna has left this world. Kali Yuga has started. And the sages had gathered over there to perform a sacrifice for the betterment of the people of Kaliyuga. And when they are doing the sacrifice, they had actually invited Suta Goswami. And they invite Suta Goswami to be their leader because Suta Goswami was personally present when Maharaj Parikshit was hearing the entire Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. So they thought that he is the right person to enlighten us about the glories of the Supreme Lord, and he is the right person to lead us on the correct path of self-realization. So he had been appointed as the leader, and they are telling him, that we are doing the sacrifice. They had actually started up the plan of a 1,000-year sacrifice. And they are telling Suta Goswami, they are saying that even though we are performing the sacrifice, we have gathered all the ingredients, but there is nothing but smoke coming out of the sacrifice. And our bodies have become black because of this smoke. So we see that even at that time, the sacrifice, they were not sure of the output of the sacrifice or whether the sacrifice is going to be successful, because there was just smoke coming out of that sacrifice. But they say, they tell Suta Goswami that because you have started narrating the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because there is glorification of the Supreme Lord going on over here, we are very pleased, even though the sacrifice is not yielding us much results. So even in today's purport, and even in that purport, where the sages of Naimisharanya sacrifice was sort of a failure, Srila Prabhupada elaborates. He says that in today's day and age, he says that the only practical way is to do Nama Sankirtan or Sankirtan Yajna. And why does Prabhupada keep reiterating this point throughout the pages of Bhagavatam? And we know that it is said in the Kali Santara Upanishad also that Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nashteva, Nashteva, Nashteva Gati Ranyata. There is no other way, other than chanting the holy names of the Lord in the age of Kali. And Prabhupada says that's very practical also. Because in the age of Kali, the first thing that is required for a Vedic sacrifice to be successful is powerful Brahmin priests. Now that is first, the first failure is there itself. There are no powerful Brahmin priests available in Kali Yuga to conduct the sacrifice. If you see today's priests, like in India, we have so many priests who perform sacrifices. And Prabhupada says also in his purports, Prabhupada says that the Brahmins of Kali Yuga know that, you know, they are not qualified enough, they are not powerful to do a proper sacrifice. But they still keep telling people that let's do this sacrifice for this particular, you know, there is some problem in your life, so let's do this and this sacrifice so that this personality is pleased, or let us do this and this sacrifice so that personality is pleased. But they themselves know internally that they are not powerful to invoke the blessings of that personality. But still they mislead people. And people like all that. If you tell people that, you know, for Kali Yuga, the best remedy is to sit and chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, people think, oh, that's such an easy thing. How can that give us the highest path? Or how can that give us the highest goal? So people don't trust. And people like if all these elaborate, flowery, you know, fruitive activities are done, they feel something nice has been performed. Prabhupada says also, people feel that a Bhagavatam, like a Bhagavat Sapta, which is regularly held in India, is successful, or a priest is successful if the audience does not understand anything. Only then it is successful. Because, oh, they spoke so well, he did not understand anything, but yeah, he is highly learned. So then, you know, it is considered a success, people feel. So Prabhupada says that there are many priests who mislead the innocent people of Kali Yuga like this. But there are no powerful Brahmins today. Even in India, when we perform some sacrifices, we see when we are invited to take part in some sacrifices, the priests take a break in between a tea and coffee break. And they actually ask, okay, now bring in some coffee time, you give us some coffee. So that is how the priests of Kali Yuga are. They are performing the sacrifice, but in between they are having tea break, tiffin break, all these breaks are there in between. And then the sacrifice continues. So there are no qualified Brahmin priests available in Kali Yuga to do the sacrifice. There are not even proper ingredients available in Kali Yuga. Even if we go to buy a fruit, which is a natural ingredient, we saw some months ago how there was this whole scare about rock melons. And there was some disease which had come, listeria, which had come in the rock melons in Australia, and people were scared. I remember in our office also they have like a fruit day sometimes. And they had cut up rock melon and some other fruits, but no one had touched the rock melon. And everyone was saying, no, there is that disease which has spread in Australia, we can't touch this fruit. So even a natural fruit, a natural ingredient like rock melon, you know, it's contaminated. There is some contamination or some disease or some virus which has gone into that. So we don't even get natural ingredients. Ghee. Ghee is another very important ingredient which is required to perform a sacrifice. But nowadays the ghee is so contaminated. That is why, you know, people feel, devotees especially feel it's best to make your own ghee at home. Like, you know, bring butter or make butter from the cream of milk and then make your own ghee. Because even in the pure ghee, there is a vegetarian symbol, but we hear that there are so much contamination, there are some animal products in the ghee, and also none of the ingredients are pure in this age of Kali for us to be able to perform a sacrifice. And therefore Prabhupada says that the only practical yajna is Sankirtan yajna for this age of Kali. Even in this purport, Prabhupada is stressing the importance that there is no other way for people to achieve the highest goal and achieve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead unless people engage in the Sankirtan Yajna of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we know that tomorrow is Janmashtami, and today we are all preparing externally. We are seeing so many arrangements, elaborate arrangements are going on in the temple in preparation for Janmashtami. We are starting our celebrations today in the evening itself. And then tomorrow will be the actual Janmashtami, when we will be expecting almost, you know, 5 to 10,000 people to come into our temple. So externally we see so many arrangements are going on, but it is also a good time to focus internally on what arrangements we can make so that we invite the Lord and you allow the advent of the Lord to take place in our hearts as well internally. So such a nice way to bring about that advent or bring about that change in our heart by focusing on the glories of this Sankirtan Yajna which Prabhupada is talking about. So we'll spend the next few minutes focusing on what are the glories and what is the real meaning of Sankirtan which Prabhupada is talking about. So we see that this Sankirtan Yajna is obviously the practical age, the practical solution for this age of Kali. Now if we look at Narad Muni, who is actually the father of devotional service, he is a pure devotee of the Lord. In his previous two lifetimes before, Narad Muni was actually a Gandharva in the heavenly planets. And he was a very great singer. All Gandharvas can sing well. So he was a Gandharva who could sing very beautifully. And one day in the assembly of the demigods in the heavenly planets, he was actually doing Sankirtan Yajna. He was singing the glories of the Lord. But even then, he was cursed to become the son of a maid servant. And Prabhupada explains over there in that pastime, it's described in the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada explains that even though Narad Muni, who was a Gandharva, Upabharanam his name was, he was performing Sankirtan Yajna, there were two mistakes he had made in his performance of Sankirtan Yajna. The first mistake was that he was thinking that the glorification of the Lord that he's singing is actually on the level of mundane cinema songs. So he was treating the singing like that, as if, you know, some frivolous cinema song he's singing. He wasn't, you know, singing in the right mood or devotion, the glories of the Supreme Lord. So that was one mistake he had made, to equate the singing of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra or the glories of the Supreme Lord to be equal to some mundane cinema songs. And the second mistake that Narad Muni, as the Gandharva Upabharana, he had made, was that he was singing in the association of lusty women. So his main purpose of singing beautifully was to show off, to attract these lusty women. That was his main purpose. And it was being actually encouraged also by this wrong association that he was singing in. And seeing that, he was then cursed and he was made to fall down as the son of a maid servant. But after that, he perfected his life and he became Narad Muni. So Sankirtan Yajna is important. Yes, congregational chanting of the holy names is very important. But we see from Upabharana's case, from Narad Muni's previous lifetime's case, that if it is not done in the right mood or in the right consciousness, then it cannot have the proper results. So we go back to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is our Paramparam Guru, and he gives a very beautiful definition of Sankirtan. Now usually the definition of Sankirtan that all of us know is given by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami says that Sankirtan means sun and Kirtan. So Kirtan, which is performed in Sangha of devotees or congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord, that is called as Sankirtan. However, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a further or a more in-depth definition of Sankirtan. He says that Sankirtan is chanting Kirtan or chanting of the holy names that is performed perfectly, completely and thoroughly. This is the definition Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives. Now what do we understand from this definition? Because we all know that our chanting, especially speaking of myself, that our chanting is not perfect yet. And no one will ever claim that today my chanting has become perfect. Because we are all servants of the holy name. We are all trying to become, you know, perfect in our devotional service. So we are all striving for that perfection or for that Shuddhanam chanting. So no one will be able to claim that my chanting is perfect. So then what does Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mean when he's talking about that chanting kirtan that is performed perfectly, completely and thoroughly? When he says perfectly, he is talking about the perfect mood or the perfect attitude or the perfect consciousness in chanting. That is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur means. He has elaborated also. He says that chanting which is done in the proper mood and the attitude to serve. So we know Srila Prabhupada also says that the meaning of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is that O energy of the Lord Hara and O my Supreme Lord Krishna or Rama, please engage me in your loving devotional service. Prabhupada says that that is the meaning of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And that is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is also saying. That having the proper mood and the attitude to do devotional service. So once that chanting or the congregational chanting is done in that mood, then only we will get the results of this Sankirtana. So chanting that is done in the proper mood, saying that I am the servant of the holy name and O Krishna, please engage me in your loving devotional service, and also chanting that is done prayerfully and not on the mechanical platform. So sometimes, you know, when we, like today and tomorrow we are going to start the 12-hour kirtan from 10 o'clock onwards. So sometimes we see that when nice kirtan is going on or ecstatic kirtan is going on, we get so engrossed in dancing or in, you know, following steps or something like that, or in the enthusiasm, that we forget to focus internally on praying when we are chanting along with other devotees. So the energy and the enthusiasm carries us, and that is really good. We are not denouncing that. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is also saying to focus on prayerful chanting even when we are doing Sankirtan. So that is why when we see, for example, when Madhav Prabhu comes to do 12-hour kirtans in our temple, we've seen him on numerous occasions. He always first starts in such a prayerful mood. And he takes us also on that platform. He tells us to pray to the Supreme Lord before we start chanting. Madhav Prabhu always keeps a photo of Aindra Prabhu also on his harmonium. I don't know if some of you have seen. He's always praying to the previous acharyas to chant in that prayerful mood so that that mood permeates in the whole room where he's chanting. So chanting that has to be done prayerfully, chanting that has to be done in the right mood and with the attitude that O Krishna, engage me in your loving devotional service. This is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur means when he says that Sankirtan should be chanting that is done completely, thoroughly and perfectly. Now we go back one more acharya and we focus on Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur in his book The Harinam Chintamani, where he glorifies the holy names and he tells us, he gives us lots of tips on how to, you know, improve our chanting. So in that particular book, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is focusing on the 7 benedictions which the holy name can give us. And he focuses on the Shikshashtakam for this. So in the first verse of Shikshashtakam, Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes in the Harinam Chintamani, there are 7 benedictions or 7 blessings which the holy name can give us. So the first blessing which the holy name can give us, which is mentioned in the first verse of Shikshashtakam, is Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So Cheto Darpana Marjanam means the heart, the mirror of the heart is cleansed by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And Prabhupada often gives the example. Prabhupada says that it's like entering a room which is full of dust. And when we are chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we are actually using the Hare Krishna Mahamantra as a cleansing agent to clean off all that dust which is there in the room. So in the same way, in our heart, because of millions and millions and millions of lifetimes that all of us must have gone through, and all the anarthas and everything that we have, conditioning that we have accumulated in our heart, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the most effective tool to clean up all that anarthas and the conditioning that is there in our heart, so that the purity of the soul comes out. Just as there's dust in the mirror, we cannot see a reflection. So when we clean up that dust, we are able to clearly see ourselves. In the same way, through the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we are trying to clean the mirror of our hearts And once that dust has been cleaned, then we will be able to see the purity of the soul and realize the characteristic of the soul, which is Sachidananda Vigraha. So that is the first benediction of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It helps us clean all the dust that is there on the mirror of our heart. The second benediction which the Hare Krishna Mahamantra gives us, as mentioned in the first verse of Shikshashtakam, it does Bhava Maha Davagni Nirvapanam. So Bhava Maha Davagni, the blazing fire of material existence, is extinguished by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So there is, we all know, there are so many problems, there is so much anxiety in this material world. It is actually like a blazing fire. None of, if you talk, you know, if we see anybody in this Kali Yuga, in the present age of Kali Yuga, no one is happy or no one is peaceful. Everybody is full of anxiety, everybody is full of doubts, everybody is full of miseries. So the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, the second benediction it can give us, is it can extinguish this blazing fire of material existence for us. And it can bring us to the platform of goodness, of pure goodness, from where we can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The third benediction which the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can give us is Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. What does that mean? Shreya Kairava Chandrika. Chandrika means the moon, or it also talks about the lotus. So just as the lotus slowly blossoms when it has the right atmosphere, in the same way, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can make our heart slowly blossom and all auspiciousness to slowly blossom in our life. So once we have chanted, we have cleansed the mirror of our heart, the dust which is there on the mirror of our heart with our chanting, then we have tried to extinguish the fire of material existence. After that, slowly auspiciousness will start blossoming in our hearts. And we all can see that. It's a practical experience in all devotees' lives. That once we have taken, you know, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy and devotees' mercy, we came in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement and we adopted the process of chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. We all can vouch how it has changed our lives for the better, how it has brought us to that platform where even though we are surrounded by problems of this world, they do not tend to affect us so much. There is so much auspiciousness which has come into our lives just because of the chanting process that we have adopted. And that is the third benediction that is being talked about. The fourth benediction which the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can give us is Vidyavadu Jeevanam. So transcendental knowledge about Krishna is compared to a bride. Vidyavadu, vadu means a bride, a newly wedded bride. So transcendental knowledge about Krishna erupts in the heart for one who has surrendered to the process of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So it's a very poetic description in the Shikshashtakam actually. So just as a newly wedded bride is enlivened when her husband is there at home, or when her husband has gone on a long trip and he comes back home. So in the same way Srila Prabhupada says, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborates in Harinam Chintamani, that this bride of devotional service is enlivened when the husband of the holy name is there. So that is the comparison given. So when transcendental knowledge about Krishna will arise in the heart, when we allow the husband of the holy name to come into the heart. And then this bride of devotional service gets enlightened. So that is the fourth benediction which the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can give us. The fifth benediction which is spoken about in Shikshashtakam is Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. So Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. Vardhanam means to increase or going up, something which increases or goes up. So the ocean of bliss for devotees will expand. So once the mirror of the heart has been cleaned, the material existence fire has been subdued, and after that we have started, you know, experiencing auspiciousness in our heart, transcendental knowledge is now erupting in our heart because of the process of chanting, the fifth benediction that we will experience is that there will be an ocean of bliss that we will experience. An increase in our bliss or in our increase in our happiness will come because of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And the sixth benediction that we will experience is Purna Amrita Swadhanam. So Purna Amrita Swadhanam, Swad means taste, and we will start developing taste for devotional service more and more and more. Once we are chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we will start developing that taste. So I remember, even in my own personal life, when I have started out in my Krishna consciousness, you know, started treading on the path of Krishna consciousness, I had absolutely no taste to hear, sit and hear lectures. I remember whenever there were lectures happening, going back many years, I would just go outside and I would, you know, look for some service. But slowly, because of, you know, being engaged in the chanting, being engaged in services, that taste for hearing developed. And then slowly, you know, when we know that when we develop the taste for hearing, it starts transforming our heart. So that is what is the next benediction which is being talked about, that our taste for devotional service will go up. And not only for practical devotional service, but also for chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra will start going up. So that is the sixth benediction, Purna Amrita Swadanam. And the seventh benediction, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about, is Sarvatma Snapanam. Sarvatma Snapanam. It means that all selfishness will go away from our heart. So the whole thing, the whole reason why we are in this material world is because we were all absorbed in the consciousness of I and mine. Why can't I be the enjoyer? Why Krishna has to be the enjoyer? All this enjoyment or everything that is there in this world is for my enjoyment. It's all mine. So that is a consciousness which brought us down to this material world. But the Hare Krishna Mantra, this final benediction it can give us, is it can make us rise above this I and my conscious, mind consciousness. What it can do is, it can make us now start focusing on Krishna and his devotees, rather than focusing on I. And even as devotees, we might not be so much focused on I and mine in terms of sense gratification. But we might be focused on I am so fallen, I am this, I am that. But Prabhupada says, in fact once one devotee was talking to Prabhupada, and he told Prabhupada, I am the most fallen in this world. And Prabhupada told that devotee, he said that you are the most nothing. We are the most nothing, you are just insignificant. So we are the most nothing, we think we are the most, because most is also a superiority complex actually we see. And Prabhupada tried to correct that attitude of the devotee. He tried to bring that we are nothing but insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of the Supreme Lord. In fact, there is a very loving exchange which Prabhupada had with Tamal Krishna Maharaj also. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was heading the Sankirtan bus party during the 70s, late 60s and 70s, and it was a roaring success, the bus party which Tamal Krishna Maharaj was heading. And I think Prabhupada wanted to send Tamal Krishna Maharaj for another service, because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was so empowered, he could do whatever service he would take up, he could do so well. So Prabhupada wanted him to engage in another service, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a little hesitant. And there was some exchange which he has with Prabhupada, and this was in the Los Angeles temple, when Tamal Krishna Maharaj was part of the Los Angeles temple. So Prabhupada actually tried to show Tamal Krishna Maharaj his position. He said that, you know, sometimes those pictures which are sent to us on Facebook or WhatsApp, where, you know, the earth is first shown, it is so huge, and then the earth becomes small and the sun is shown, that the sun is so huge and the earth is so tiny in comparison to the earth. And then, you know, some other galaxy sun is so shown, which is 10 or 1,000 times bigger than our galaxy sun. So how, you know, the perspective keeps reducing, you know, the reference, the point of reference keeps reducing. So that is what Prabhupada made Tamal Krishna Maharaj realize. He said that in this whole world, which is so huge, and this whole universe, the earth is such a minuscule part of this material universe. In that universe, there is one small city called America, in which there is a small town, a small country called America, in which there is a small state or small city called Los Angeles. In that there is this, you know, Prabhupada talked about the lane on which the temple was situated. And inside that you are there serving. So can you realize what your position is? This is how Prabhupada explained to Tamal Krishna Maharaj that we are not significant at all. We are just insignificant servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sarvatma Snapanam, this is what it does. It allows us to come out of that consciousness of I and mine. Even the consciousness that I am most fallen. And it allows us to focus on Krishna's pleasure and the devotee's pleasure. Or what are the needs of the devotees. So we see that these are the seven benedictions for a devotee who chants the Hare Krishna Mantra nicely. And then the last line is there. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. So Shri Krishna Sankirtanam, which is done victoriously, only then these seven benedictions will be available to us. So like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, going back to his definition, chanting which is done in the proper mood and consciousness, which is victorious chanting, will invoke these seven benedictions upon us of the Hare Krishna Mantra. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur focuses on the next verse of Shikshashtakam. The next verse of Shikshashtakam is Durdaivam Idrisham Iha Jani Nanu Ragata. So Durdaivam. Durdaivam means I am so unfortunate that I have no taste. Even though the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can give me all these benedictions, however, I am so unfortunate that I have no taste for chanting this Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this is a contradiction we are seeing over here. In the first verse of Shikshashtakam, all these benedictions are being offered and the whole glories of the holy name are being shown to the whole world. And in the second verse, the contradiction is there that our most unfortunate position is being shown. So then how do we bridge this gap? How do we access the glories of the holy name or the benediction that the holy name can give us when we are so unfortunate and we don't have any taste for the holy name? So again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that how can we get this adhikar to chant the holy name properly and to also avail of these benedictions which the holy name can give us. So he elaborates that the third verse gives us the solution on how to avail of these benedictions or how to take advantage of these seven benedictions that the holy name can give us. So in the third verse it is said, we know the third verse, Trinada Pishini Chena Taro Riva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. So in fact it is said that this is actually the Siddha Pranali Mantra for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. This is a mantra which our acharyas have explained. We should wear around our neck like neck beads and we should always remember this mantra. Rinadapi Sunichena means offering all respects to others and expecting none in return. And always in that humble state of mind to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord. So we don't have taste, so we cannot constantly chant the holy name of the Lord. It's very difficult. In fact, there are some devotees that we see, you know, even in our temple we have so many glorious examples. We see that many devotees are constantly chanting. They have such good taste for the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And sometimes we see that yes, it's easy for them to chant this Hare Krishna Mahamantra because they are not doing any other practical devotional service. We, you know, our mind can tend to brush off such devotees who, you know, chant so much more. But Prabhupada explains that it is not so easy to engage in chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra constantly because our mind is so fickle in Kali Yuga that it's very hard to sit down and constantly chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Plus, obviously, we have not yet achieved that platform of Trinadapi Sunichena, where we can actually constantly chant. So once, you know, during Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, he had a famous disciple. We all have heard of him. His name was Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. And Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was known for his chanting. Day in, day out, he used to just sit and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra constantly. And some disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually went and complained to Maharaj. And they said that Maharaj, this Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji is not doing any other services. We are the ones who have to do all the services. He is just sitting and chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra all the whole day. So that is not good. Even we would like to sit and chant the whole day and not do services. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur reprimanded his disciples. He told them that, you know what, you all put an ad in the newspaper. And you all invite anybody who, you all invite people to come to our temple. And write in the ad that the only thing you have to do is sit and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra throughout the day and night. But you will be given free lodging and free prasadam. You don't have to worry about anything for the rest of your life. We will take care of you. All boarding arrangements, lodging arrangements, heating arrangements, everything will be provided to you. The only service that you have to do is chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra constantly. And actually he asked his disciples to put that ad, but no one came. No one applied. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj has developed that taste for chanting. And don't undermine that he's just chanting the holy name every day and he's not doing any practical devotional service. Because he has taste, he's able to do it. Otherwise, he couldn't have been able for someone to constantly chant. And Srila Prabhupada also glorifies Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. In fact, during Prabhupada's initiation ceremony in Mathura, Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was present. And Prabhupada was encouraging him to constantly and loudly chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra while the sannyas initiation was going on of Srila Prabhupada. And when Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was once not well, there was a doctor who had come to check him. And I think he had a feeble heart or something like that. He was having some problems with breathing and all. So there was a doctor who had come to test him. And the doctor put a stethoscope to Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj's heart. And he actually made everybody hear. So many people were present around there, and he made everyone hear that when when a doctor puts a stethoscope to our heart, what sound he should hear. You know, he should hear the beating of the heart, which is dub, 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 dub. But instead of hearing that sound, only the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra was vibrating out of Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj's heart. So he had such taste for chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And this is what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told all his disciples. Just leave him alone and let him continue chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So this is what, you know, we are also striving for. To come to that platform where we can also constantly chant. And when we constantly chant, we'll be able to avail of these seven benedictions which the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra can give us. And not only Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, if we see our own Srila Prabhupada, he was also constantly absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, constantly absorbed either in speaking about the Lord or chanting about the Lord or doing kirtan. And there are so many instances of Prabhupada, you know, which show that Prabhupada was internally and externally both absorbed in the glories of the Lord. So once Prabhupada, this was during the late 70s, like a few years before Prabhupada had left the planet, his health had started deteriorating already. And once he was in his room in Vrindavan, and because he was in severe pain, he was sitting in a crouched position. And there were many disciples who had gathered in that room. So for half an hour there was complete silence because Prabhupada was sitting in this crouched position, obviously in immense pain. And none of the disciples dared open their mouth to speak to Prabhupada because they could not tolerate seeing Prabhupada like this, and they did not want to disturb Prabhupada. So then they thought that, you know, since till half an hour, no, Prabhupada has not spoken, so they thought that they should leave. So slowly they got up and they started leaving, one by one. And Prabhupada saw that, oh, all the devotees have started leaving. So then he raised up his head and he asked everyone. He said, do you all have any questions? And the disciples thought that, no, our spiritual master is in so much pain, we should not disturb him. So some of them still started walking away. But you know, there was one new person who was quite enthusiastic. So he didn't understand the mood of the other disciples. And he said, yes, Prabhupada, I have a question. And he asked some question to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada became so enlivened when that question was asked to him. He immediately told his disciples, go and bring my Bhagavatam. I will answer this person's question. And immediately Prabhupada sat down. And it is mentioned that for the next 2 hours, he spoke constantly about Krishna from the Bhagavatam. So just before that, he was crouched in immense pain. He could not even sit properly. And then for 2 hours, he speaking, completely absorbed in Krishna. So this is how even Srila Prabhupada was. And even during the early days of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, when he was, you know, even the first temple was not set up and he was sharing, he was living with Dr. Mishra, and Dr. Mishra used to sometimes invite him to give classes. So Dr. Mishra was a Mayavadi, and he would, you know, take, because obviously that was his forum, he had invited the people. So he would speak for most of the time, and just because Prabhupada is present, out of respect, he would tell him to speak for 10 minutes. And he would say, Prabhupada, only 10 minutes are left, so you can speak for 10 minutes. And Prabhupada would also show lots of understanding and empathy. Yes, yes, people have to go back home, they have to get back to their work, so I'll speak only for 10 minutes. And then it is described that as soon as Srila Prabhupada got the microphone and the Vyasa Sun, and he got an opportunity to glorify Krishna, he would not stop speaking till 1 hour. Constantly he would speak, because not only was he wanting to glorify Krishna, obviously, Prabhupada was so enthusiastic, he could not stop speaking, but he also wanted to negate whatever Mayavadi philosophy Dr. Mishra had already spoken. So this is how absorbed Srila Prabhupada was also always, like Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. He didn't care. In fact, you know, Dr. Mishra, it is explained in the Leelamrita that he would show him some signs, you know, in Hindi we say Ishara, that he has to stop now, he has to stop now because people have to leave. But Prabhupada would completely ignore Dr. Mishra. He had got the Vyasa Sun, he had got an opportunity to glorify Krishna, he was going to make the most of it. So he would not stop till he has finished his 1 hour Bhagavatam class to the audience that is present over there. That is how absorbed Srila Prabhupada would get when he was given an opportunity to glorify Lord Krishna. And there is a famous verse in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first chapter. So the 10th canto is, as we all know, it is description of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's pastime stuff in the 10th canto. So before that, Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring from Sukadeva Goswami very submissively. He is saying that you have described so many dynasties to me. Now you please describe and elaborate the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And he also tells him, he tells Sukadeva Goswami that don't think that I'm tired of hearing of the pastime, because already 9 cantos have been spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. So he says, don't think I'm tired of hearing these pastimes. I'm completely fresh. And don't even think I'm hungry or thirsty. Because of hearing the nectar of the glories of the Supreme Lord from your lotus mouth, all my hunger and thirst has been vanquished. And this is the same Parikshit Maharaj who a few cantos ago, like before the Bhagavatam was started, he was the one who could not control his thirst. And he put that death snake around the rishi's, the rishi was meditating, he put the death snake around his neck. So same Parikshit Maharaj is saying that don't think that I am hungry or thirsty. The nectar of the glories of the Lord has completely vanquished all those desires to eat and drink. So please continue narrating the glories of the Lord. And there is a famous verse which comes up in that section. It says, Nivritta tarshe rupadiya manat bau shuddha chotra manobi rama ka uttama shloka gunanu vadat puman virajyeta vina kashugnat. So the translation is given is that glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best medicine, especially for the age of Kali. However, it has to be heard in the proper parampara. So again, you know, going back to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that you know, do it wrong. Hear it properly and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra properly. So one of the criteria is being given over here, that glorification should be heard in the proper parampara, Prabhupada writes. And this is the best medicine for someone who is afflicted with lust and who wants to overcome his lust. And it is the best medicine for overcoming the repeated cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. So, but it should be chanted by one who is free from the false sense of sense gratification of this world. Only then he'll be able to relish the nectar of the holy name. And further on, it is explained in that section, Sukadeva Goswami says, he says that who will not relish this nectar of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when heard in the proper parampara, when, you know, the best medicine for overcoming lust and repeated birth and death, who will not have this taste except one who is Pashugnat. Pashugnat means one who is a butcher, that means a killer of animals, or one who is a killer of the self. Only those two categories of people will not have any affinity or any taste for hearing these glorification of the Lord. But everybody else will definitely get absorbed wherever the glories of the Supreme Lord are chanted. So this is, you know, a verse which brings out that yes, Sankirtana, in what mood it should be done. Because even chanting the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also Sankirtana, where, you know, all of us get together and we are hearing together the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is what Sukadeva Goswami is stressing here, in what mood it should be heard and what it can help us do. It can help us overcome the lusty desires in our heart. So very important that we develop good taste for chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And we develop that mood, which is the solution which is given in the third verse of Shikshashtakam, of, you know, always chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in a humble state of mind, thinking ourselves lower than the tree and most fallen, and also offering all respects to others. So if we have that right mood and the proper devotional service, we will be able to chant this Hare Krishna Mahamantra constantly. And as devotees, sometimes we get so caught up in doing practical devotional service that we don't spend enough time cultivating this taste for Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So I was listening to a lecture and the speaker was saying, it was quite eye-opening. He was saying that one day, you know, because whenever especially all services come up, like festivals come up, there's so many services. And everybody wants to be part of those practical services. Sometimes the heads of department who are organizing these services, it becomes hard for them whom to give service to, because everybody wants to be engaged in some service, especially during these festivals. But that devotee in the lecture was saying, he was saying that one day our faculties are going to stop cooperating with us. We are going to get old, age is going to catch up. In Kali Yuga anyway, you know, people, we don't even have to become old to get knee pain, leg pain, back pain, all these things. You don't have to wait for old age. So many young people also develop all these pains and aches and all. So one day our faculties are going to stop cooperating with us. we will not be able to do practical devotional service one day anyway because of old age or because of bodily ailments. So this devotee was mentioning in the class that that is why as devotees it is so important that we cultivate our taste for chanting early on in our devotional life. Because if we keep doing practical devotional service but we have not sufficiently spent time cultivating the taste for the chanting or cultivating our attitude to chant like more and more and more, then what will happen is that once we are not able to do practical devotional service, our mind will not allow us to sit down and chant, because that will be the only service that will be left for us, hearing and chanting. So if we see there is a rush for practical services, but usually there is no rush for hearing. And that is why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur singled out Srila Prabhupada, and he really liked Prabhupada. Because when they were on a yatra in Vrindavan, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking for a long time. And then he told some of the disciples who were gathered there, he said, I'm sure you all must be wanting to do parikrama also, since you all have come to Vrindavan all the way from Navadvip. So whoever wants to go on parikrama and see all the different places of Krishna's pastimes are most welcome to do so. So most of the disciples left, but Srila Prabhupada kept sitting there. Because Prabhupada had understood that it is very important to hear from your spiritual master rather than go and take bath in the holy rivers or rather than just go and visit all the holy places. So Prabhupada had that taste for hearing and chanting since a long time ago, before he even started the Krishna consciousness movement. And this devotee was stressing in that lecture. He said that if we don't develop this taste for hearing and chanting, it will not hold us in good stead when our practical faculties have stopped cooperating and we are not able to do practical devotional service. So that time our body will force us that there is no other devotional service we can do except sit down and chant. But the mind has not been trained to chant Hare Krishna Mantra. The mind has not been trained to sit and hear for long time lectures or, you know, Bhagavatam or something like that. So that is why it is stressed by Prabhupada. Develop your taste for chanting and hearing from the beginning. You know, focus on devotional service, practical devotional service. But this is an aspect which as devotees we should not neglect. Especially when we are preparing our hearts for your Lord Krishna's advent tomorrow. So even in Hawaii, there was, you know, in the early days of Krishna consciousness movement, in Hawaii, you know, there was a faction that had happened. So Srila Prabhupada always used to tell, when devotees used to circulate pamphlets, when they were distributing books, they would distribute pamphlets where Srila Prabhupada had described what is the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And they would, in that pamphlet it was written clearly that, you know, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, the meaning is that we are prayerfully requesting the Lord to engage us in His devotional service. And Prabhupada has mentioned in that pamphlet which the devotees were distributing that one should carefully chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and avoid offenses to others. So even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and other previous acharyas have said that if we carefully chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in the proper mood, in prayerful mood, and we avoid offenses to other devotees and offenses to the deities, we have won the battle. We have definitely, you know, on the path, the doors to, you know, going back to Godhead or achieving love for Krishna are definitely opening up for us. So it's Prabhupada was stressing a lot, how do we develop that taste is avoid offenses to other devotees and avoid offenses to Krishna. So in Hawaii in the early days, when Srila Prabhupada was not there, the temple had been set up. There was a faction of devotees which got separated from the mainstream devotees. And this faction of devotees who got separated and they started their own small movement, they were saying, they were actually going by that, you know, thing that there are not even hard and fast rules for chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So they had started this following, sort of saying that we can chant. They stopped wearing dhoti kurta. They would still wear their hippie clothes. And they would say that, oh, we can keep chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in whatever way we want. We don't have to adhere to the rules and regulations of chanting. So they would do whatever they were doing previously, like in their hippie lifestyle, but they would chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra also. And the mainstream devotees would go and tell them that no, we have to actually follow these rules and regulations which our acharyas have laid down. This is not the way to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. You all will not get the benefit. They will not get the seven benedictions which we spoke about. But those devotees were saying, no, it is written that there are not even hard and fast rules. So then they all waited that, okay, let Srila Prabhupada come and then we will clarify this doubt. So when Srila Prabhupada visited Hawaii, Both the factions went and met Srila Prabhupada. And the mainstream devotees presented their case, and this separated faction, they also presented their side of the argument. So Prabhupada heard both sides of the debate, and Prabhupada then said, he gave a very nice class at that time. So Prabhupada said that yes, what the mainstream devotees are saying is correct. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra should be chanted in the proper process that has been laid down by our acharyas, following the rules and regulations that have been laid down for chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. We cannot chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra frivolously, because it is not going to give us the benefit that we are looking for. And Prabhupada gave a very powerful example. He said to make the other faction which has separated, to make them explain, Prabhupada said that chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra without following any rules and regulations is like cooking with smoke. So in the earlier days, you know how cow dung or wood was used to cook. And if you know, we have also tried this in Vrindavan. When we go for yatras, we have cooked with cow dung there. So if there is no fire in the cow dung, then you know just smoke starts coming out. And so much smoke gets created that it becomes so difficult to even stay there. Your eyes will start watering. And what to speak of cooking? Obviously, no cooking will happen because it's just smoke coming out instead of fire from the cow dung. So Prabhupada says that chanting this Hare Krishna Mahamantra, not with the proper mood and without following any rules and regulations, is like cooking with smoke. What can that sort of cooking do? Nothing will get cooked and all your efforts will get wasted. So Prabhupada said that even for 300 years, if you keep the pot on the place where just smoke is coming out, no cooking will take place at all. And that is how what y'all are doing. He explained to the other faction. Y'all are trying to cook with smoke when y'all are chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra without following the process. And we know the famous verse, Bahu Janma Kareyadi Shravana Kirtanam Tabutana Paya Krishna Pada Premadana. So if we chant for millions and millions of lifetimes, but we are still of doing offenses, we are not free of the 10 offenses, and we are not chanting in the proper mood of devotion, then we are definitely not going to achieve the benefits which the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can give us. And this is what Srila Prabhupada was trying to tell us. So in order to achieve the 7 benedictions, which Bhakti Vinod Thakur is talking about in the Harinam Chintamani, we have to understand the 3rd verse of Shikshashtakam, which is chanting in the proper consciousness. Only when our consciousness is proper and we are avoiding offenses, will we be able to relish the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and we will be able to get those benedictions that the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can offer us. And that is the way in which we will be able to prepare our hearts for Lord Krishna to advent into our heart tomorrow. So we'll end here. It's time up. Vritha Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Any comments, questions or corrections?